That Ed Snyder, was it something about he cut his fingers off?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get together. He played the fiddle, and he played good. He was a good fiddler. He went out in Charleston, and he went to one of them Holy Roller churches or something there, and got a religion. They didn't believe in music. They said music was a sin. And they got that boy all wrapped up in that, you know, he just took a hatchet and went down the yard or stump there, laid his hand up on the stump, and cut one finger, I believe it was, off. And I don't remember which one, but anyway, after it was all over with, he come to himself, I mean, stopped long enough to use a little bit of common sense and see what a fool he was. He was ashamed to tell anybody what he'd done and why he'd done it. But he went back to the fiddle. He got the fiddle, got to getting the fiddle out, and got so that he still played a pretty daggone good tune with them. With them fingers.
Stumps.
Yeah. The last time I heard him play, he played down here at Paul's store one night. He went back there, and Paul had about half a dozen fiddles laying back there on the shelf. Anybody that come in and play a fiddle, why, they just walked back there and picked them out once. Now, Paul loved music, and you were always welcome by golly to come back there and get you a fiddle and sit down and play a few tunes. Paul, he liked to hear anybody play, you know. But Snyder was over, was down there at Charleston, last I heard of him, and but he, in spite of losing that finger or whatever it was, but he still played, and played pretty good. Of course, he didn't play like he did before, but how in the world if a man's got sense enough to a statue say, come in out of the rain. How in the world can a man do a thing like that? Oh, my good God, a man is... In the first place, if a man... If anybody don't know any more than to think that playing music is a sin, he don't need to play music or anything else, because of course the good Lord will take care of him anyway. If a man's that stupid to start with. But things like that happened, it did with him. They said he went to church and got religion and went home, and there's a stump out in the yard, and he picked up a little hand, I walked down there, and can you imagine a thing like that? Man's got to be temporary, at least temporary, insane. There's no thing like that. I don't know what ever happened to him. I don't know if he's still living or not. I'd like for you to hear him play, though. If I ever can track him down, I'll see if we can't get together. I'd like for you to hear him play. Yeah. If you see them fingers and then talk about playing the fiddle, you say, how in the devil are you going to play a fiddle? But by George, he does a pretty good job on it yet.
And you think he's probably still living? You think he's probably still living?
Oh, yeah, I think the last count I had of him, I'm not sure it was Charleston, but I think it was that somebody said he was down around Charleston. He was working at something down there when, I think maybe before this happened, or maybe during the time it happened. But he did it over there. He lived over there, Holly. That's where he was at when he cut his finger. No, by gosh, I'm not. I think he was down in Charleston when he's done that. I think somebody said, I ain't sure.
But he played after that up here.
Yeah, he played it after that. He seen what a fool he was when people would talk to him after. If he's been around, if he's been, ever been around, before this happened, I didn't know anything about his religious belief or anything. I never heard him before. I never heard him play. Mm. I don't think. I might have heard him once, maybe down there. Paul had the store down, Paul McClain had that store down there. They tore it down, set right across the road from the restaurant down there at Dorthorn, over on this side there. And he had about a half a dozen fiddles. Had two or three pretty good fiddles. And anybody come in and had a fiddle trade or sell or trade for groceries or anything else, Paul trade him out of it, take it back there and had a shelf. Grocery shelves back there were and two or three shelves full of fiddles back there. If you wanted to play the fiddle, you just went back and picked you out one.
Let's see here. How about Bub Thayer, Ernie? Hmm? Bub Thayer?
Oh, yeah, Bub. Bub was my old buddy growing up. Bub and I grew up together, went to school together, worked together. Bub was a fine person. He got so he was doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. Bub played, and his oldest brother, Juan. Mm-hmm. Have you got him on there?
I think I do, yeah. And they were from, were they from down around Centralia? Or
Juan.
Lon, yeah, I've got him.
Yeah.
Where did they live?
They lived up on the river there, above us, about 3 miles from setting up Elk River. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever run into an Amity White?
Who?
A White. His first name was Amity. They tell me he...
I know a lot of Whites, but I don't remember that first name.
Mm-hmm. And how about Ed Williams?
Ed was pretty. Ed and Lute.
Lute Williams and Effort?
Effort? Lute.
Yeah, I have Lute here. And was there a Laban Williams?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a Laban Williams and an Effort Williams? I've got several Williamses here. I've got an Ed Williams.
Yeah, there was an Ed Williams. Ed Williams and Lute Williams. Ed Williams and Lute, there's brothers.
Uh-huh.
Ed and Lute. I believe that's there was another one of them, I think, or maybe a couple more, but Ed and Lute played.
And I've got Laban.
Who?
Laban Williams and Effort. Effort Williams.
Effort, now I've heard Effort play.
Uh-huh.
I've danced to many except for Effort's playing.
And where
Effort was a pretty good fiddler.
Where did they live?
Effort lived on Granite Creek. Ed and Lute lived across the... Well, Lute did. Lived across the river there, up again that hill from the end of the Sutton Bridge, where the across the river there, the uh-huh. bridge.
Mm-hmm.
They was pretty... Ed and Lute both was pretty good fiddlers.
Uh-huh. How about a Reuben White? Reuben White?
Ruby White.
Reuben White? Did you know him?
No, I don't think so.
They may have been from up around Burnsville.
Where they live?
Yeah. Well, that's quite a list we got there. Did you ever hear of a Dan Smith?
Who?
A Dan Smith.
Sam?
Dan.
Zan. Smith.
Dan Smith.
Yeah.
Never heard of that. Uh-huh. Frank Shaver?
I think I've heard Man?
Yeah.
I believe I've heard him play.
Well, that's quite a lineup.
They, at one time, Jerry, they probably was a bunch of the best musicians in Braxton County as it was in the state.
Yeah. I believe that.
They, that Richards family, I tell you, that bunch of people was just really a gifted bunch of musicians. There was Sylvie, Gila, Roy, Al, and the old man. Of course, he was a teacher of the whole bunch. The old man, their dad.
Uh-huh.
But that Gila man, I tell you, her and Sylvie both, they were just as good a bit of players as you'd want to listen to. Now, by God, they'd play you dance music or... I never could pay much attention to Sylvia or to Gila's music from watching her. Oh, she was pretty. She was a pretty girl. She come to our place one time. Her and her brother, and I think it was two of the girls, Sylvia and a younger sister. But I don't think she was playing yet then at that time. But anyway, they come to our place, her mother and her, and maybe there was, maybe two of them, Sylvie maybe was along too, but anyway, Bub Thayer, boy that I run around with, and Carl and I, and, oh, I don't know, there must have been six or seven of us boys there, and I said, now you must lay off, I'm going to take Gila. Gila.
Home. Uh-huh.
And he said, yeah, you're going to play the devil. I'm going to take her. Every one of us, I suppose she thought to be, keep any of us from feeling bad. She just tell all of us no, and that's what she done. Every one of us asked her to walk home with her. Yeah. Went home. Walked home with the rest of the family. But she was, as far as looks is concerned, well, she was a good girl. But she was pretty. My God, she was pretty. If you just, you wouldn't pay much attention to the music, you'd be watching her.
Did you hear that, Mabel?
Yeah, I hear it.
That whole
one, here.
The old man played, he was a more of a, just a, playing out old square dance fiddler. He went after to boy like, as Dad used to say, like tearing guts out of a dog. He was rough, but by George, he played pretty good. But Sheila and Sylvie, the two girls, they were actually good fiddlers. But Sylvie and Sheila and Roy and the old man, Frank, there was four or five of them in the family there. That, by golly, they was all good. You could put them all there in the room where you couldn't see them, let them all play, and you'd have a time of deciding which one was the best.
Ernie, did you know who a Floyd Carpenter? Did you know a Floyd Carpenter?
Floyd Carpenter? No, yeah. I never did. Mm.
He must have been related to you because he was recorded way back in 1938 by somebody. He sang lots of old-time songs, ballads, you know?
Yeah.
And they have the tape of him up in Morgantown. And I talked to his grandson, his daughter, she married a Tucker, and her name is Roxy Tucker, lived down around the...
I've heard that name.
Wilsey somewhere.
Yeah.
And she sang old songs. And now her son, who lives out near Ohio now, he plays music, and I was talking to him not too long ago. But he said that, you know, that their... His ancestors were the same as your ancestors, you know. He knew all them stories about the... you know, about Jeremiah and all those. He knew them from his mother, so I figure you two must be related somehow. But he didn't know how either. Did your uncles, you know, Jehu and Jake, did they ever play any music at all?
No. Uncle Jake never did play anything that I know of, neither did Uncle Jehu. I don't think either one of them ever, I don't know whether they even could sing or not. I never did hear them. But now, I don't know that's got now. And none of the girls, my dad's sisters, there wasn't one of them played any kind of music. Flossie and Melissa and Rhodie and none of them played any kind of music. Dad was a music lover. He liked to hear it. It made no difference to him. Well, the better, the more he liked to listen to it. But I mean, as far as you never heard him say, "Oh, I don't care anything about him or her. They can't play much." You never heard him say that. He liked to listen to anybody play. It didn't make no difference if they just learning, and they missed half the notes. He'd step out there or stand there and listen to them play and enjoy it. He loved music, and he liked to, and not because I'm saying it, but Dad himself was an awful good old-time fiddler. There used to be a lot of fish camps in our area there, and the big shots, you know, the lawyers and the doctors and the big shots, you know, from Charleston, from Parkersburg, from Carstensburg, and all over the country, Morgantown, all over the state, and a lot of the states, you know. They come there to them fishing camps. And of course, the camps belong to the doctors and the lawyers and so on down Sutton. And when they all knew all about Dad, you know. You mentioned Shel Carpenter, why, they tell you all about him. And when they went to camp, whoever's camp, Doc Brown's or the Hawkinses or the Berries or whoever camp, Bland's or whatever, would rent their camp to somebody, the first thing they done, they'd say, "Now the first person you want to see when you get to camp, you go talk to Shel Carpenter. He'll tell you where to catch the fish and when." And, they just laugh it off as a joke, you know, and go on about their business. And they'd most likely, when they come up to camp, by a lot of them people, you know, at Peaston Lakes and stuff like that. And the fishing type of fishing that we did in our part of the country, in our river, maybe it was not like the way they fished in these big lakes and stuff like that, you know. And, they wouldn't catch no fish. Finally, they'd come down. "We don't seem to be having any luck, Mr. Carpenter. How about going out with us in the morning or tonight or whatever time they can go?" "Well, if I get a chance, I'll come up and go out with you." And them fishermen were just like game hunters. There were certain places there was game, and you could find game. And there was places you couldn't, the same way as fishing. And Dad knew every place where the fish usually stayed around, you know. Every rock, every log. And he'd take them out. And never forget one bunch was up there. They wanted Dad to go with him. And he said, "I ain't got time to fool around with them fishing. I've got work to do." And I said, "You want to go with them? Why, you up there with them fish you want to go with too." There was a great big flat rock, as big as this two rooms here, I reckon. Then on the upper edge of the rock, there was a down underneath the rock about as high as that stand over there is off the floor, and went back under. You could look right down over the edge of the rock, sure, and you lay down there, and you wouldn't be more than all 4 or 5 feet from the fish when you look down in the water there, you know. Put your hook down there, and he'd come out there if you want. You know, we do that just for sport. And I dropped my, this fellow has said, there's two of them there, from Charleston. And they come up there and want me, somebody told them to come to our place and get the boat. And if they need somebody to run it for them, and the most of them did, the most of them couldn't run a boat. They couldn't paddle a John boat up the river or down either. And they come up there and want to know if there's anybody there, they get, they want to cast, bait cast, you know, artificial. So I took them up to this, as far as this, in the next eddy above, which was about, I expect, pretty three quarters of a mile. And this rock, this big rock, was just like a big layer of concrete. And on the upper side of it, back underneath, it evidently was up off of the bottom enough that they could go back under that. And you could drop a bait right down in a certain place there, where there must have been a kind of a channel where they went back through under that rock. Of course, you couldn't get down to look back under there. And you put your bait down there and just hold it, watch your bait. And when one would come out and get it, he probably wouldn't come out far enough that you could see him, how big he was or anything like that. But he'd come out enough to get your bait. You just let him out and pick up your pole and tighten up on your line, jerk, drag him out. And these fellas went up there, I don't know how the boat, they come in one to get the boat out of Charleston, lawyers. And they asked me a few questions about where was a good place to be. So, well, I told them the best I could explain to them. They was going, I don't know, maybe a couple of hours or something like that, and come back. It was getting late. It wasn't dark or anything like that, but it was getting long, late in the evening. They said, I don't think there's any fish around here. We haven't got a bite. Well, I said, you know, fishing is like anything else. I said, if I'd come in your law office and try to take your place there and handle a case or anything like that, I wouldn't know a thing about it. I'd have to have somebody, if I was educated, I'd have to have somebody to give me a little lead on it so I'd know what to do. And I said, fishing just like your law office. And he laughed, you know, took it as a joke. And the other said, and at that time, money was hard to come by. He said, I'd give $10 just to have a two or three little old fish to take back home. He said, if I go back home with old fish at all, he said, they'll run me off the place. I said, well, I'm not actually doing this for your money, also I'd like to have it. But I said, if you want a fish out bad, I said, I can show you where to catch a fish if it means that much to you. Oh, he said, I'll tell you, I'm not joking. He said, I'll just give anything. He said, even I don't care if it's small, how small it is. He said, if it's a fish, I don't want to go home empty-handed. I said, get in the boat. He looked at me like I was crazy. And I took the chain loose from where I had it tied, threw the chain in the boat, and I said, get in. He kept looking at me like he was kind of puzzled. And he got in the boat, and we had to go through one little shoal to get up to this rock. And it was about, I expect, a good three quarters of a mile. And this shoal was over. And of course, the shoal was short. I didn't mind that. And he said, where are you going? I said, you want some fish to take home, didn't you, so bad? And I said, I don't care anything about you, but I feel sorry for your wife. Put her trust in you to bring her a fish, and here you went empty-handed. I said, I'll send her a fish. Yeah, he said, you play hall, but that's what you do. I said, okay. You just watch me a little bit and see. I said, you wouldn't want to bet a little money on it, would you? Oh, yes, sir, I'll bet you money on it. Name it. I said, I just joking. I could have took some money off of him because I was just that sure that I could catch two or three fish. And I took him up to this rock and took his hook and baited it and just took a hold of the line about that far up on the line, let the bait hang down, walked out on this flat rock and dropped it down in the water and got down on my knees where I could see down over the edge of the rock so I could see if anything took a hold of it. And I dropped that bait down. The sunfish was just about that size. He comes out and he says, I let go of the line. I said, jerk. And you ought to see the look on his face. He said, who the hell said you think you're kidding? He said, I know a little bit about it. He's pretty mad. I said, okay, give me the pole. He handed me the pole. I said, jerk. Then you ought to see his face. He said, Jesus Christ, fellow, he said, I'd give $10 to cut that fish. I said, I told you, jerk, didn't I? Well, he said, I thought you were just making fun of me. I said, I don't make fun, man. I said, you want to catch the fish, take home to your wife, and I got you one. Now, I said, you want to go? He said, you reckon there's any more in there? I said, well, it could be. I took his bait, I said, sure, it's a pole. I gave him the pole, took his bait, and dropped it back down, one about the same size. Come out, and I said, now, you want to catch this one, or do you want me to take the pole? No, sir, he said, let me do it. I said, well, jerk, not hard. He jerked a little bit. Boy, you ought to saw him when he pulled that piece in. Ah, yeah, you never saw a kid with a toy he was taking more than that. Yeah, and there was lawyers and doctors, and you know, you're me and old dumb farmer out there.
He'll come up with some big words there directly.
Huh?
Take your toothpick up out there. Stick it there in the chair arm.
Huh?
I said you'd come up with some big words there directly. I hope he don't have that on.
The boys out there, you that bunch from Charleston down there, I told one of them one time, I said, ain't no cock, I wonder the kind of people we got down there in Charleston with everything screwed up. And even a lawyer, big lawyer down there in Charleston. But they know, you know, they were good sports. They know, you know, you were just rubbing it. Yeah. And they laugh, they get a big kick out of it, you know. But I just talk anyway to them. When they leave, why, they say, now we're going to try to come back a certain time. And they name a certain time. And they say, now you try to be loose so you can quit us out on the river. They'd come up there and I'd go out with them and they'd say, Kip Little Page, I don't know if you ever heard that name or not. He's one of the top lawyers in the state. Little Page, Kip Little Page. Huh. There was two of them. I forget the other's name. They were brothers. And he was supposed to be a kind of a champion caster, artificial bait caster. He went to these big lakes, you know, and fished with the big shots, you know, the millionaires. And he come up there, and Lon was a lawyer down there. Charles used to be here at Settling. Lon was a great friend of our family. Was Dad's lawyer when he was around Settling there. Dad always went to him for his legal work. And Lon was a fine person, and he come up there. Had Kemp Little Page. Kemp was one of the state top lawyers at that time. And I forget that other lawyer's name from Charleston down there. And they came up and that road up the river, from Sutton up the river to our place was just a dirt road, just a country dirt road, pretty rough. But they'd come up there in their fancy automobiles and they'd twist and squirm around one side to the other and they'd get up there, you know. But them big heavy cars, they'd bump on the rocks, a lot of them, you know, would. Mm-hmm. A lot of them would tear their mufflers off. But they'd rob.